Hi, I'm Brandy from the Inspiring Bee. Today I'm talking with Susan Purvis, a speaker, educator, and author of the outdoor adventure memoir, Go Find, My Journey to Find the Lost and Myself. Okay, thank you, Susan. I'm so excited to have you here, and I have a ton of questions to ask you, of course. But I wanted to start off telling a little bit about your story. I read on your website that in 1989 there was an event that happened in Colorado where three toddlers were buried under an avalanche, and the rescue dog wasn't able to rescue one of the boys, and he died. And that 6 years after that happened, it really bothered you to the point where you wanted to take matters into your own hands and train in a puppy, which you've never done before. And that kind of altered your entire life, and you wrote a book about it. So I would love to hear more, because I think that's so fascinating. And by the way, the name of the book is Go Find. What was that pull for you? Because I think you were training to be like a ski instructor, and you had no thoughts about doing this prior. So why all of a sudden did you feel this calling to do this?
Hello, thanks Brandy for having me on your show. Greetings from rainy northern Montana in May. What you just described is what we call in a book an inciting incident, mm-hmm. where my life was, you know, way over on this other side. I was actually looking for gold in Latin America with my husband. I was a gold exploration geologist by training, but something was missing in my life. I was down there. I was alone with him. We were out in the middle of nowhere. I didn't really speak the language. I didn't have my tribe, and I felt really alone, even though I was just newly married. And we could commute and live anywhere because we would just do shifts down in the Dominican Republic. So we chose the last great Colorado ski town in Crested Butte, Colorado, to commute from, because when we were off, we wanted to be off and walk and hike and bike right out our door and ski. So I decided to get involved in ski patrol while I was living in this mountain town. And I heard about an avalanche, like you said, that had buried three toddlers across the street from this world-class ski resort. And I was leaning in, listening to the story during this big storm, and they were saying, yeah, can you imagine in this tiny little town, an avalanche buried three toddlers outside their condominium in a town? And I'm like, are you kidding me? And I said, what happened? And they said, well, the avalanche dog that they had at the time went over to find the toddlers, but failed to find them. Mm. You know, we go through life, and I'm like, what do you mean the trained dog failed to find the toddlers? And it was at that moment, and at the time they didn't have a trained dog, I thought, wow, what would that look like if I got a dog? I was a 33-year-old woman, you know, I wasn't going to have kids. You know, and trained a dog to save life.
I
couldn't get rid of that idea. And so I'm like, how am I going to train, get a dog? I travel 2,000 miles to work. Wow. I'm not home. How, you know, me get a puppy? So that basically would not leave me. And I started that pursuit to get a dog and train it to save a life, vowing to never leave anyone behind.
You know, I'm so inspired when I heard that, because I feel like things like this happen in all of our lives, right? I mean, we hear about something that happened that's tragic and we want to help, but very few people actually will do something and take action like you did. Do you think it was like a calling, or why did you feel this urge to do something that you've never done before and take it on yourself?
So, you know, that's really why I set out to write a book. But I thought something's missing in my life. I didn't really know what it was. Mm. But what I've concluded over the years is that, you know, our heart has to beat a song. And my song was not beating. I was in a disconnect with myself. I didn't really care about looking for gold. The only reason why I did it was for money. You know, I didn't have much money, so... You know, my husband and I, we had to go hustle and work, and when we're away working in remote, difficult, dangerous environments, we can save a lot of money. So, and then we would take time off. That's kind of how I've lived my life, work really hard and then take time off. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had to decide, well, what is it that I want in life? And I thought, I need to pursue this. So I wanted to be on ski patrol. I ski raced in the Midwest in northern Michigan on a 600-foot slope.
Wow.
And now I'm about to ski patrol on one of the gnarliest ski resorts in America, where they have at least 50 avalanches inbounds at their ski resort that they have to mitigate when the danger is high. And I'm like, I'm tiny. I'm a 5'4", 110-pound young woman, which I like to say I had 1 foot in the mud looking for gold in the Dominican Republic, mm-hmm. and 1 foot in the snow learning about the world of search and rescue and ski patrol and avalanches. And I had to learn how to navigate small town politics because the town's only like 1,000 people.
Yes.
And let's just keep piling it on. I'm a female with a big ambition in a male-dominated profession in ski patrol, in search and rescue, in medicine, and the business of saving lives.
That is amazing. Did that give you a sense of purpose right away when you're doing that? When you decided to do that?
Mm-hmm. So what I ended up getting a little black lab puppy, and who was rebellious. I like to say she's half NFL linebacker and half deviant and defiant, always hungry black lab. For your audience who have black labs, they know they get into all kinds of trouble in pursuit of food.
Hmm.
So she was as stubborn and independent as I was. And as the saying goes, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. So I showed up in this town, and I'm still commuting, by the way. I have to, I'm in a new marriage with my husband. I'm trying to balance life in the Dominican Republic, life with a puppy. And I'm now a part-time ski patroller. There's five women and probably 45 men. And I also decided that I needed to join search and rescue because if the ski patrol doesn't work out, I still need to save lives. So I show up, you know, at a first search and rescue meeting with probably 25 men and me, and I'm like, hey, I have a puppy and I'm here to save a life.
Hmm.
And they're all looking at me like, not on my watch, little lady. You know, that was kind of the feeling I got.
Wow.
So the story I had to write was, you know, how I had to learn how to manage all these different, and learn very quickly, because a dog's life is so short, how to save a life in some of the most avalanche-prone areas in America.
How did you, from the time that you decided to, how long were you doing it, by the way? How long were you rescuing people with your puppy? How many?
Well, she was active until she was about 13 years old.
Wow.
So she had a career, but there's all this certification that has to happen. You have to prove yourself. I can get into that. You know, I continue to do it because really at the same time I got a puppy, I got involved in medicine and I started my own company teaching wilderness medicine. So I switched and transitioned from geology to teaching wilderness medicine and avalanche courses, which I still do today. My company is called Crested Butte Outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
And I teach everyone from the Secret Service to the Sherpa guides to housewives or flight medics, and that's been sustaining me for the past 20 years.
That's amazing. So you decided to take up this new career. I mean, it's really amazing to hear how it seemed like life had just happened, and then you decided, you know, that you were going to do something exciting and make a difference, and then it just, things kept happening, and life, I guess, kept pulsating, and you kept taking it on, and then there's another thing and another thing. You've done so much from just that desire to help. And at one point when you were doing this, did you think, hey, you know what, I need to write a book? And were you taking notes about the experience while it was happening?
Yeah, thanks for asking that question. Here's my honest truth, is I always wanted to be a writer. I've kept a journal since I was in sixth grade. I feel like I never had the confidence or the skill set to be a writer. I remember when I was in college and I'm like, I want to write about my travels. You know, I biked from Montana to Alaska, I biked around New Zealand. I'm like, oh my God, I have all these stories to tell, but I didn't have the courage. And I knew at some level I couldn't afford to be a writer because the writers I knew weren't making any money. Like Outside magazine had just launched like in the early 80s, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to be an Outside, you know, writer, but you know, it wasn't very practical. So I always squashed that dream. And then, you know, when you're training a dog, especially when you really get into the business of saving lives, you have to have detailed training logs. You have to have detailed mission reports, right? Because now we're on crime scenes. You know, I eventually trained my dog in the disciplines of avalanche, water, wilderness, and cadaver. So we, you know, became a resource for really sheriff's departments, which really control the missing person agenda. You know, if someone's missing, whether they're caught in an avalanche or drowned or missing in the woods, the sheriff in most counties in the United States operate that. So Ivy really became a resource for the sheriff's departments to call. And you have to remember, I was in a county the size of Connecticut with 10,000 people, and they had never had a trained dog before. And so I had to prove to them as well that we are really good at what we do and we'll never leave anyone behind. So that was the promise I made to myself when I started this agenda. It was also the same year I said to my husband, till death do us part. So I got married, got a dog, and changed my career, which was also another huge juggling act. But going back to the book, you asked me about the writing. I knew I would write a book someday. I had to go write experience a life worth telling before I could go write a book. And this I knew would be the story.
That's awesome. And you know what's so funny that I heard you say was that you always wanted to be a writer, but you didn't have the courage to do it. And just listening to your whole life, it seems like everything you've done took a ton of courage. Do you think it gave you confidence, maybe when you were saving lives, that maybe I can write this?
Yes, here's what started to happen for your writer audience out there is people wanted to interview me training my dog. Like I got people's attention, and then I'm like, ooh, people are interested. And then I thought, oh, maybe I could be writing that story. Then I started writing my own mission reports because I'm the only one who was there that could tell the story accurately. So I started to get a little confidence. Do you see that? And then I'm like, I would be around these writers going, oh, I could do that. Now, when I went out to, you know, my dog career's over, I said, okay, I've got to sit down now. If I can train a dog to save a life, I can certainly write a book about training a dog to save a life. So my agenda was, I moved, my husband and I at the time, we moved to Montana, and I knew I had to move to Montana to write a book. I don't know why. We went from Colorado to Montana. And I said, okay, this is what I'm going to do now. Now, my husband basically had had it with me, and he said, nope, not on my watch. And he left. He left me after 18 years together.
He left you because he didn't want you to, he didn't want to move. It was a lot of things.
So here's what I'll say. I started writing. The thing that I was blessed by is I came to Montana, and there was a 20-year writing group here. It's called Office of the Flathead. Their motto is writers helping writers. And I found all these mentors. I call them my midwives. as they say, they helped me birth my book, but I surrounded myself every week with these writers for 10 years.
It's amazing.
And they showed me the art of writing a book. Now, it's kind of like the dog program. I had to surround myself with dog handlers around the state of Colorado. They were my midwives, mostly women, who showed me how to train and deploy a search and rescue dog. You know, so it's a, I love the fact that writing really isn't this individual thing. You know, we need the community to help us get our story down.
Yes.
I needed a community to help train my dogs. And so that's a beautiful thing going forward. This book, Go Find, My Journey to Find the Lost in Myself, really represents the women and a few men that helped me write this book.
Well, you know what I hear you say, which I've heard you say from the beginning, it's like you're really good at pulling the themes of what's going on in the moment of your life. Like there's a lot of parallels, you know, from what you were doing working with the dog to rescue people to what was going outside personally. There seem to be a lot of themes and parallels, and it's, you seem to really be good, like I said, at picking at them. And do you think that's true? Do you, I mean, how are you able to do that?
So how do I find the motivation and the willpower to pursue when I get something in my mind to pursue it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that writers are really good at having an experience and then to not just have that experience, but be able to take from that experience and to be able to see what they learn from it. And it sounds like there's a lot of things going on in your own personal life. And like, you know how you said that there was a community that was needed to help you write the book. Same way there was a community of people that helped you to become, you know, a trainer to help other people.
Mm-hmm.
So I see that you have like a lot of parallels of themes in your life where there's similarities in that way. And that also that, you know, I read that you're a speaker and that you're able to draw from that. Or even when you talk about fear and how you're always afraid of writing, but then, you know, here comes this perfect opportunity for you to test your courage. I just see that a lot inside of when you're speaking. Do you think that's a gift in you as well? And if so, like, how do you find those parallels?
Right. Thank you for that question. It's, you know, we have to ask, everything we do is the why, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, why did I write this book? Because I wanted to empower and motivate young women to follow their purpose and passion. And I got the crap beat out of me. And I had to prove myself 16 times greater than any other guy on the planet would have to do to say, here I am, I'm worthy, and I can kick your ass. And, you know, and that takes a lot of courage and determination. I probably got that spite from my mother. Like, you know, she was a go-getter. So, and the same thing's true with the book writing. You know, it took me 10 years from the day I sat down to the day it came out. And there's a million reasons why we would quit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if I would have quit training my dog, I would have never had the story to tell. If I would have quit with my book, I would never find a platform to tell the world about how to pursue purpose and passion.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have to do it. It's part of our way. Just like, you know, you have a calling to do this podcast. Bless your heart. I'm so glad I reached out to you because
it's
what we know right now, and it has to happen.
Do you think that in the moment? Do you think that in the moment? Sorry, that you knew that. Like as you're living these experiences, because I do think that things happen in our lives to push the authentic who we are out of us. And maybe you were always brave and courageous and you just had to have an experience to force that out of you. But do you think that in the moment when you were going through these difficult situations that you were aware that, hey, I'm going through this life-changing experience that's going to change me? Or were you just living it in the moment? And was it through reflection that changed your opinion?
Yeah, Yeah, so here's the catch-22, because I thought with my dog, as soon as I saved a life, like if I had a live find, my whole life would change. I would be the hero. I would be so amazing, and people would pay attention to me. Like, that's kind of a weird aspect, but I thought, wow, what would that feel like and look like if I actually did what I set out to do? And so my dog, 6 years into her career, we tracked a lost little kid in a snowstorm up at 11,500 feet. We deployed at 2 in the morning. We found him by daybreak. I used all my skill set with my dog and my husband, and it was an amazing feeling. But it was the amazing feeling that had to come within me and not expect any of this exterior accolades. It's kind of like writing a book
I
too.
was
It's
just
like,
gonna
oh my
say
God,
that.
once I write this book, oh my God, people are gonna think I'm so amazing and all these accolades. But it's not what you ever think, and really the joy and the beauty have to come within. This is what I'm learning along the way, and this is what I like to tell people, because you will be disappointed in life if you're 20,000 people are going to say, hey, atta girl, because it usually doesn't happen. And then, so where do we find our joy? How do we know we're on the right path? That's such a personal thing. And we have to just always do our own self-validation rather than waiting for it to come from somebody who will never, ever, ever give it to you.
I think that's so true, and I completely agree with you. I'm just wondering, in the moment as you were going through this, or as you were writing this, the difficult moments of your life, did you already know that, or like what gave you strength to keep going when it was tough? Because I think a lot of people, maybe, in reflection, we can feel that, but in the moment when it's so hard and we do feel like giving up, like what was the thing that helped you to keep going in both situations?
A group of cheerleaders, my midwives, I had to show up every week with words, and they could have been lousy, crappy words. And they'll read it, and they'll, I'm in my critique group, and they'll be like, what are you really trying to say, Sue? And then I could verbalize it, and I would record it, and then they're like, oh, that's what you need to say. So even if it's crap, find a supportive group that will, you need a group of cheerleaders, and you have to be accountable, if not to yourself, to them. You've got to show up in the chair, whether in the critique group chair or your own chair at your home. You have to sit down. Listen, I'm an active woman. I ski for a living because I'm an avalanche educator. I boat. And to sit home and write a book and with all my ADD and undisciplined life, I mean, I had to chain myself to my desk and come for water, get a drink of water every once in a while.
What was that the hardest thing for you to write this book?
I think that was up there, and also just the confidence. I had so much self-doubt. Every day I had a fight with my inner self about, yes, you can do this. No, you can't. You're a failure. You're a loser. What do you think you're doing? And I believed, oh, I could write a book in 3 months. That can't be that hard. And, like I was saying, it took 10 years. Now, here's what I'm going to share with you about the writing process. I thought this story was going to be about my dog and I and the missions and the training and the missions. Well, I was 3 years into my writing, and I wrote an essay. This is after my husband left me. And I wrote this line, and it was just one line. And it said, how come it's easier for me to jump out of the side of a helicopter at 13,000 feet with my avalanche dog in my lap to look for a dead guy than it is to talk to my husband about our 18-year relationship? And the other thing that, and then I'm like, oh, I got to answer that question.
How did you even get to that question?
At the end of my career with my dog, mm-hmm. but it really became my first chapter. You see how that works?
How did you get to that place where you could ask yourself that question? I mean, there's so much self-awareness that you need to be able to ask that question, to be able to know to ask that question. What was going on in your life for you to be able to pull from that, from your past, and to ask that question?
Well, so I wrote that, and the other aspect of that is I was the avalanche expert, right? Mm-hmm. We found all these people in avalanches, my dog and I. And when my husband left me, I got buried. I was the one buried 10 feet deep. Mm-hmm. I couldn't breathe. I was being suffocated. I couldn't move in all my grief. And my dog had to come and rescue me.
Wow.
Oof. Wow, right?
Yeah.
And so why does the expert or the specialist get caught?
Mm-hmm.
So then, now it's becoming more of a how to train a dog and all the missions, because that's a pretty flat book.
Mm-hmm.
Now I have a book with emotional content, and I've got to dig deep into my soul and talk about why I'm 50% responsible for a dysfunctional marriage. It's not all his fault. And why then I could bond with an animal to save a life, but I couldn't bond with a human, which was probably my most important relationship.
I'm just so curious, sorry to interrupt, but I'm curious to know how you're able to get to that question, because that's such a hard question, and it takes a lot of guts and awareness to be able to figure out that you need to look at yourself, you know, because when relationships don't work, we tend to blame the other person, but it takes incredible amount of, self-awareness to be able to recognize our part in the parts that didn't work.
Well, that's probably why it took so many years to write it, because, you know, early on I couldn't go there.
Mm-hmm.
And then if, you know, you're in deep thought and meditation and on your hands and knees crying, you have to go to that level, or you're never going to have an audience. I mean, my book did become a best-selling and an award-winning memoir. At one point, I was number four on memoirs behind Michelle Obama.
I saw that. That's pretty amazing. Congratulations.
And so,
yeah.
Because everybody can relate. Mm-hmm. You know, when you look at readers, it's mostly women. When you look at dog owners, you know, most people you know would say, I love my dog more than I love my spouse. I mean, mm-hmm. okay, it's the God honest truth. And I mean, there's some humor to it. So it was a long, torturous thing. But, yeah. you know, once I say it, there's no more shame in it.
Yes.
And now I can speak in a platform
mm-hmm.
and talk about the stuff that really matters.
I think that's really incredibly brave to ask that question and to be able to take that on, but it is freeing, right? And can you imagine if you didn't get to that point where you could answer that honestly, like, where would you be today, do you think?
Yes, let me add another layer to that. I did get a literary agent in New York City, and when I thought I had my manuscript ready, he said, listen, I'm going to send you some notes. And then if you like my notes, I'll represent you. And my agent was also like an ex-VP at Simon & Schuster as an editor. So he was both an editor and an agent, which is a beautiful combination.
Mm-hmm.
And he sent me his notes. It wasn't just a page of notes. It was 5 pages of notes. And his best advice to me is, Sue, you're not telling this story with your husband 50-50. It's probably 80-20. 80 your husband's fault, 20. He goes, you have to show me where you're at fault in all this too.
It's just interesting.
And I'm like, no.
The agent is like a therapist too. That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
And And so he's like, I'm not buying it. You know, so people that we meet in the writing process puts us our toes to the fire. And we've got to keep searching out those people that will make us show up and really tell our truth.
Wow, what a
wonderful
story.
And, you know, sometimes that critique person, they don't have enough courage to do that. Because you have to tell, you know, you have to go into a critique group saying, tell me your truth. We can't sugarcoat any of this stuff.
Does it, when you got that feedback, was it painful to hear, or were you kind of used to because of all the difficulties you had been through already?
It was the best. I like that challenge. I owe him the world because he made me really show up. It made me, I remember calling my mom. I'm like, Mom, oh my God, why? This is after, you know, my husband left me, my dog died. I'm like, and I'm trying to get this book, you know, out, a polished copy. I'm like, Mom, why couldn't I just have a regular dog? You know, why did I have to trade it to save lives?
Aww.
You know, and, you know, just those honest, you know, questions. And you know what her answer was? Like, what do you think a mom would say?
It's going to be okay. Things will be okay.
She goes, Susan, how is it that a mother can have three children and they all come out differently? And I'm like, oh, I'm like, I love you, Mom. So there's some tender moments. And then I thought, oh, I need to put my parents into it. So, like, when I would leave for the Dominican Republic, I could never... My husband and I, at the time, we never stopped working in the Dominican Republic. So we always commuted for those, you know, 12 years with my dog. And so I would fly my dog to Michigan, drop my dog off at my parents' house for the summer. And so then I sat down with my parents and said, tell me about Tasha when she was at your house all summer, right? Mm-hmm. So sometimes I had to ditch my dog.
Oh, my God.
And my dog wasn't that naughty with my parents, but she sure was with me.
Interesting. That's so funny. How were you able to have these two different lives as well? And during, was it way after everything had been done with this career and you were starting your new company that you began to write the book?
Yeah, the same year that I got the dog and I was on ski patrol and search and rescue, I was asked to work for a orthopedic surgeon who had just moved to this world-class ski resort, and he started a medical practice, Slopeside, taking care of all injured skiers. So I ended up working with him for 11 winters, and that's where I really learned about medicine. And so I was able to continue with medicine and start my own company teaching wilderness medicine courses, which I still do today. Now, it's interesting because COVID's happening. Mm-hmm. I'm one of the few providers in North America to start a class since COVID.
Oh, wow.
So that is really interesting, right? Because you have students coming and no one has been teaching during the past 2 months.
Yeah. Well, what will you be teaching?
Really starting one of the first classes.
What will you be teaching about? Is this online or is in-person classes?
No, it's in person. So we would do all this contact work and, you know, rescue scenarios and pulling people out of holes. And, you know, the class has to be modified and changed just because of COVID. So, this is really interesting, right? And how we disinfect and decontaminate and, you know, how do we teach it at safe distance? So that's kind of what's on my mind at the moment. And that might start to change, and maybe I'll just become a full-time writer, right? Sit at home and have no exposure.
Is that kind of what you would want to do? Because you have so many things going on. I mean, I know you're a speaker as well, and you're a writer, and you're teaching.
And now I'm starting to teach writing at writing conferences because I have a great ability, not to brag or anything, but I can draw, mine the gold out of people.
Mm.
You know, because really they'll say, I'll say, what's your story about? And they're like, la, 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 la. And I'm like, no, what's really your story about? You know, what's really going on with your story? Tell me about the things you can't.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you did it because you're so good at with your own story. I mean, because you've had so much experience, like for your own book, how did you know which parts to leave in and which parts to leave out?
Whew. Well, you know, a good story is driven by showing, not telling. So it's all scene based. So just for your audience out there, what I did is I have so many stories and it's all, you know, scene based. So around the circumference of the inside of my house, I put a 3x5 card and say, what's the scene? Where are we in the world? What am I doing? And where's the conflict? And what am I supposed to illustrate in the scene? And they can be little scenes or they can be big scenes. So I like to say that all these scenes are like a pearls on a necklace, right? So you just randomly in order, it's just scene, and there might be 500 of them. You got to write them, and then you start shuffling them around. Not everything can be in the story, so you have to be very specific of what's the story trying to tell, what's the arc of the main character.
Did you teach yourself all this? I mean, it's really fascinating, like how you know how to do those things, because I mean I'm just starting to write, you know, books in the last few years, but I've had to take a lot of classes to learn some of these things that you're teaching about.
Yeah, there's only four rules. Do you know what the four rules for writers are?
Well, please tell me. I'd love to hear them.
You have to read a lot, you have to write a lot, you have to study your craft, and you have to hang out with writers.
Really
true. So luckily, I was in this program, Authors of the Flathead. We were about to have our 30th anniversary this year, but we canceled it because of COVID. But, you know, last year, I became an instructor at the conference. Mm-hmm. So back in the day, I was just this little eager student with no knowledge. I didn't know anything about story structure or the craft of writing. And now, you know, I'm pretty good. I studied the structure of writing.
Did you read a lot of memoirs as well? I know memoirs is supposed to be really hard to get published. So I wanted to ask you also how you found your agent, but did you read a lot of memoirs before you started writing yours? Or?
Yeah, I think I'm a nonfiction girl and I'm a science girl. So I've always read books that where I could, you know, get knowledge that was actual truth. I'm not a big novelist. And then I'm fascinated with memoirs. And I have I'll give you an example. This is how I pitch my book, right? Because, you know, as authors, we have to have a beat. We've got to have that elevator pitch.
Mm-hmm.
I like to say, go find my book, is the seriousness of Into Thin Air.
Mm-hmm.
It's the silliness of Marley and Me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the internal journey of Eat, Pray, and Love.
That's a really good pitch, because I know all those books.
Yeah, so all those were huge
mm-hmm.
memoirs, huge motion pictures.
That's a really good pitch. That's a way to get their attention. Is that how you're able to find your agent?
Well, do you want to hear my agent story?
Yes, I'd love to hear your agent story.
So one thing we need to do as writers is get out of our bubble. And you have to go out into the world with your work, which is scary. I trained a dog. I had to get out of my bubble, and I had to go show up at all these sheriff's departments and police stations and say, here I am with this certified dog. Pick us to solve your problems. That takes courage. It's no different than a book, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to apply to a writing residency. And I was one of six people selected in the world. I was the only American. And I did a 21-day writing residency in Canada where we had two mentors to the six people. And the mentor I had was the editor on probably one of the most successful outdoor books that later became a really successful outdoor movie. And he said to me, Susan, if you do this right, your book will be a commercial success. Oh, okay, that's the confidence I needed, right?
Yeah.
So after my 21 days with him, because I'd been writing in a bubble in Whitefish, Montana, I said, okay, like, you're going to make me famous and you're going to take on my books, right? That's what I was thinking. I'm like, so now what do I do? And he says to me, you need to go find an agent. I thought he was going to hand me an agent, right? But he was like, you need to go find an agent. And I'm like, oh, crap, how do you do that, right? So I looked at, like, my favorite book, and I looked in the back of the book to see who their agents were, because everybody thanks their agent.
Good idea.
I think I sent out one letter. Well, anyway, in this little town I live in Montana, we have a literary journal, and they were having a literary event, and they asked me to read, because they heard I was writing a book. The other reader was in she's Canadian, and she was in my 21-day program. And she's like, oh, yeah, you have to have Superbus, you know, read. Her book's amazing. And she brought down another person. And when I met him, he said, oh, you've got to send your book to my agent. He'd love your book.
Wow.
I'm like, really? You would do that for me? I didn't even know the person.
Yeah.
I asked him, like, 3 years later, I go, why'd you do that for me? Like, and how'd you know my book was any good? Because you hadn't even read it. And he goes, well, the writer I was with said your book was amazing.
Wow.
So, for those people who are just getting on the call, you have to get out and you have to make connections.
Mm.
You have to hang out with writers and surround yourself with the best.
I also think that you have to write a really good book, because it seemed like, yes, it took you 10 years to write the book, but then the actual finding an agent and the publisher was, it seemed relatively quick.
It was so fast.
Yeah.
And then when my manuscript was ready, it was sold like within a couple of weeks.
That is so amazing. Wow, what a story. Did you have to hire any editors, or you had beta readers? It sounds like that was a big part of the writing process for you, your critique group.
Oh, critique group for yes. Two. And, you know, so if you don't have one with Zoom, you guys could, you know, people who are listening, create a critique group. And now it can be anywhere in the world because we have Zoom, and you can upload your documents and read them and, you know, work through them. You know, you in Hawaii, I don't know if you have a writing critique group there, but you could probably, with all your resources built, have an international critique group.
Oh, yes,
and you
definitely.
Do it through Zoom. It'll be fabulous.
Well, you know, Susan, we're getting close to the end of our time, but I just had a couple more questions for you. I was so curious because, you know, one of the dreams I think for a lot of writers is to create a whole career as an author and a speaker. And how did you go about doing that? I know you're teaching as well. Do you have any advice for writers who want to eventually do that?
Yeah. Opportunities are everywhere. So I said, I'm going to be a keynote speaker now. Just like, I'm going to train a dog and I'm going to write a book. I'm going to be a keynote speaker. And you know what? It starts to happen. And you can start out with your little library. Do it for free. A lot of the stuff you have to do for free. I trained my dog for free. I wrote the book for free, kind of. And now you're speaking for free. But I tell you what, now, you know, I've been doing this for many years. I can show up at your podcast. I know my beats. I know the story. I'm here to inspire and empower, saying if I can do it, you can do it. That's my simple message. Right? Like, if I can do it, you can do it. And this is, you know, if you want more information, you know, reach out to me. I'll tell you everything I know. So start at your local library. Start at the high school. Share your message. Go to Rotary. These are all like the, I'm just thinking of the little things I did in town, you know, at the community college. You know, podcasts. It's all about getting the beat down and you know, what's your message?
Okay, thank you. That was really helpful. And One more thing. I was wondering if you're working on anything, any writing right now? Are you working on another book? And also where people can find out more about GoFind.
Yeah, so I really want my GoFind to be a motion picture, and so guess
Wow.
what? If you want something done, you got to do it yourself. So I'm learning about screenwriting now,
Oh my
which is really
gosh.
challenging because how do I make this into a 100-page screenplay?
That
That's what
is
I'm working
amazing.
on right now.
That is exciting. You know,
And
I when I sorry, when I heard about your book, I was just telling you this really quick. I kept thinking about Cheryl Strait's Wild book.
yes.
And I mean, that's so cool that you're gonna make it into a movie. So that's awesome.
Well, I'm working on it. But you know me.
You will do
That's my
it.
target.
Yeah.
Okay, you're hearing it from me in 2020. That's my target. You'll be the first to know
Oh my
if that
gosh.
all happens.
Yes, I
And
will
it might
definitely. I
take
want to
me 10
interview
years.
again. Yeah, I'll interview again so I can hear about that process. That's exciting.
Then probably the easiest way right now, I'm a fan of supporting indie bookstores, but you can my book's on Amazon and Kindle. I narrated the audiobook.
Oh,
My publisher flew me
yeah.
to New York City. I sat in a booth and read my book for 40 hours.
How was that? Like, I
40
was gonna
hours.
ask you about that too. I
Oh,
forgot to ask you that. Yeah.
I thought training a dog was difficult. Sitting in a booth and reading my story for 40 hours was so hard. So 40 hours for an amateur like me to read is a 13-hour book. So I narrated that audiobook at 13 hours.
How did you do
So
that? Did you have to? I mean, was it time?
keep your sentences simple, people who are writing, and keep them short. Because I read it and I went, oh my God, what was I thinking with that really long sentence?
Is that something that all writers have the option of doing, or is it just because the agent suggested it, recommended it?
No, it was part of my contract, and I
Oh.
got published with Blackstone, which was is one of the largest audio producers in the world, and
Oh.
they had recently switched to book publication. So they are experts in audio, and I was given that opportunity because I probably it's a memoir, and it's better to hear it from the person who wrote it.
Well, I heard bits of it, and I mean, you're just able to bring a lot of excitement to the words, so I felt like I was right there with you. I think you did a
Oh, well, that's
fantastic
good
job.
because my engineer is also an audio coach, and she'd be like, stop, Sue, go do 10 push-ups
Are
because
you
you are
serious?
dragging your ass right
Oh
now.
my
Like, you have to
God.
put some excitement into this.
I mean, yeah, because I noticed too with words, I mean, people can pick up on everything, just like when you sing. If you're nervous, you can tell. So yeah, I heard it was adrenaline. It was adrenaline rush when I heard it. One last question. I was wondering, you know, if you didn't really answer, but if you are gonna do a second book, like what would you have learned now from writing this book and doing the audiobook and everything that you've been through that could make it easier, you think, for the next time around?
I want to collaborate with another writer.
Hmm.
For me, it's difficult to sit by myself. Like, my skill set is telling a story, but I want someone sitting there dictating it and getting the grammar right and moving it along. And I
Yeah.
think, with the right person, collaboration is going to be fun and effective, and then you're not so alone doing it.
Yeah. Well, that's good for anybody who's listening out there. Maybe you can contact Sue and find out if you could work with her. I think that would be exciting. I mean, I definitely think there's
Yeah.
a really good dynamic, and a lot of, I know there's picture book writers that do that a lot. I was just listening to an interview, an audio interview, where there's two writers who, you know, fed upon each other. So that is also an interesting dynamic and opportunity. So that's something you're looking to for the future. Or what is your next project that
Yes.
you, besides turning this
Well,
into a movie?
yeah, I'm working on either the things I do for money, how I made a living over the years, doing some crazy jobs, or a book maybe for a young adult from my dog's point of view of her career.
Oh my God, that would be so interesting to read. Like a picture book?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be, I'd
Yep.
love that. Well.
So, these are the things I'm thinking about. But so thank you, and So nice to
No.
meet you.
Oh no, thank you so much. I feel like your life has just been so exciting and amazing. And I mean, just to hear from even before you decided to take on training, your puppy, like you were already doing all these exciting things. I feel like your life was meant to be a writer. And I every time I interview somebody and they say, I never thought I was gonna be a writer, because I was afraid or because I didn't think I was good enough. I think we were always meant to be writers. We just needed the experience, to really push us to do what we were meant to do. And you have all of that, you're very inspiring. And thank you so much for telling us and sharing with us all the things that happened into your life. And it really is inspiration for everybody who's listening, for myself as well. So thank you. I'm really grateful for this conversation, Susan. I hope we can keep in touch too.
Absolutely. Goodbye.
Bye.